Imagine a tiny island paradise transformed into the most heavily defended shoreline of World War II. In November 1943, American Marines stormed the beaches of Betio, a speck of land in the Tarawa Atoll, smaller than New York Central Park. What followed was 76 hours of combat so brutal it forever changed how Americans viewed war. Until Tarawa, censors had sanitized war coverage, shielding the public from graphic realities. But the shocking casualties, over 3,000 Marines killed or wounded in just 3 days, and Norman Hatch's unflinching combat footage shattered these barriers. When the documentary With the Marines at Tarawa hit American theaters, it stunned audiences with its raw depiction of war's horror. Time correspondent Robert Sherrod, who waded ashore with the Marines, later called it the most haunting memory of World War II. What made this battle so pivotal wasn't just its strategic importance, but how it stripped away America's sanitized perception of war, forcing a nation to confront the true cost of victory. Charlie Montague and Gene Tsang were best friends in pre-war San Antonio, bonding over their Hoopie, a 1932 Chevrolet. Charlie was a quiet marksman with girlfriend Billy, while Gene was a natural charmer. Pearl Harbor prompted their enlistment in February 1942. Marine boot camp transformed them through grueling training. "You became nothing when you went there," recalled recruit Albert Gilman. Throughout, Charlie and Gene maintained their faith, attending church while longing for home. After fierce combat in the Solomon Islands, the 2nd Marine Division found sanctuary in New Zealand, a stark shift from jungle warfare. With local men fighting in North Africa, New Zealanders welcomed the Marines as heroes. It was a land of milk and honey, steak and eggs, friendly allies, and beautiful girls, wrote correspondent Jim Lucas. Gene fell for local June McDougal, while Charlie remained devoted to Billy. The idyll ended when Colonel Edson intensified training. Under Major Henry Jim Crow, whose men would follow him to hell and back, the battalion steeled itself for coming battles. Robert Louis Stevenson's treasure trove of South Sea Island beauty would become the site of one of the Pacific War's bloodiest battles. Betio, merely 2 miles long and 700 yards wide, held a crucial airfield that the Japanese, under Admiral Shibasaki's command, had transformed into a fortress. The defenses were formidable: a triple-tiered bomb-proof command bunker, underwater obstacles with mines and barbed wire, 8-inch naval cannons, hundreds of machine guns, and a coconut log seawall designed to trap Marines on the beaches. Tokyo stationed 5,000 elite troops, including the skilled 7th Sasebo Special Naval Landing Force. Shibasaki boldly claimed, "A million men cannot take Tarawa in 100 years." The prospect of attacking such a fortress seemed nearly impossible. Marines would have to cross open water toward an enemy fortified for months, carrying 90 pounds of equipment with no cover and no retreat, a mission that would test both their physical and psychological limits. In the pre-dawn of November 20, 1943, Marines ate their possible last meal, steak and eggs, as American battleships bombarded Betio. Despite the fierce bombardment, many Japanese survived in their reinforced bunkers. At 8:24, the first wave of Amtraks encountered low tide, exposing the coral reef. Contrary to Japanese warrant officer Ota's expectations, the Amtraks powered over it like dozens of spiders scattering over the surface of the water. Under heavy machine gun and mortar fire, many vehicles were hit. When an explosion disabled Montague and Tsang's Amtrak, survivors struggled through bloodied water under heavy equipment. The first shore message was grim: "Have landed. Unusually heavy opposition. Casualties 70%. Can't hold." Within 30 minutes, 31 of 40 men in Montague and Tsang's platoon were dead, including 2 San Antonio schoolboys who had survived boot camp and combat in the Solomons, only to fall in the battle's first moments. Marines at the seawall confronted a hellscape of twisted trees and smoke, with hidden Japanese positions throughout. Major Ryan led them over the wall to begin eliminating enemy pillboxes. Their systematic approach was simple: draw fire to locate enemies, flank with grenades, then charge with bayonets. PFC Malbach executed this pattern for 3 days, fighting through overlapping fields of enemy fire. Major Crow walked exposed with his cigar and shotgun, taunting hesitant Marines. "Look, the sons of bitches can't hit me. Why do you think they can hit you? Get moving." Corpsman Stanley Bowen treated wounded under fire with raw courage. "You don't think in a situation like that. You just do it. I knew damn well they were shooting at me, but you don't think about the danger." By the second afternoon, Marines found Japanese soldiers choosing suicide over surrender. Colonel Shoup's message changed from "situation assure, uncertain" to "casualties many, percentage dead unknown, combat efficiency, we are winning." By November 23, the battle's toll was staggering. Of 4,800 Japanese and Korean defenders, only 146 survived, including just 17 Japanese soldiers. The Marines suffered equally devastating losses, with 1,009 killed and 2,001 wounded, a casualty rate over 60%. Baityo had become a hellscape. Bodies littered the beaches and lagoon, with Lieutenant Lillibridge reporting dismembered remains everywhere. John Magruder dubbed it a stinking Golgotha, with barbed wire literally draped with dead Marines. The equatorial sun accelerated decay, and by dawn of D+2, all freshness was gone, and Baityo was nothing but stink and death. On November 24, engineers discovered Charlie Montague and Gene Seng where they fell on D-Day. They were buried 20 yards inland under makeshift crosses, with Corporal Ashurst performing the burial service. When news finally reached their families weeks later, Mr. Montague broke down, while Mrs. Seng remained stoic in public, grieving privately as she held her family together. Tarawa's 3-day battle, with casualties matching the 6-month Guadalcanal campaign, changed America's war outlook. As General Julian Smith stated, it showed Americans there were no cheap shortcuts to win wars. The battle's documentary won an Academy Award and boosted war bonds, despite temporarily reducing Marine enlistments. It revealed crucial military needs: waterproof communications, more Amtraks, and extended pre-invasion bombardments. Veterans carry lasting trauma. Stan Bowen faces recurring nightmares, Robert Mulbach suffers constant ear ringing, and many grapple with survivor's guilt. Jack Preston Sr. daily questions why he survived while others perished. Modern Tarawa bears few visible scars, though remains occasionally surface. While public memory fades, families maintain vigil, like Joseph Sobol visiting Red One's burial ground. Father George Montague's tribute to Charlie echoes Scripture's "greater love than this no one has than to lay down his life." In 2005, Charlie's girlfriend Billy admitted, "I still am in love with him. I still pray for Charlie." This tiny atoll became ground zero for generational grief, exemplifying war's lasting human toll.